Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have a little bit later. It's great to have a Ravens fan on board. I'm here to talk sports, and Kevin wants to talk about a green car going around in circles.
And then the blue ones and the red ones.
No, you wear the Danica hat. You wear the Danica t-shirt. Wow. And you hate the fact that I watch the race to watch the race.
You don't watch the race to watch the race. You watch the race because it's an event. That's the only reason you watch it.
That's probably true. I agree with that. I will watch the Daytona 500. I will watch the Charlotte 600. I'll watch the Indy 500. I'll probably watch the Brickyard 400. And maybe a little bit of a race here or there, especially if it's in prime time. But I'm not going to religiously follow it from week to week to week. I would be considered to be an interested casual fan.
But what's the difference between someone who follows college basketball as closely as many do and someone who follows IndyCar as closely as I do? Nothing. It's just, it's not considered mainstream.
What's the difference? Well, I think the mainstream part is correct. And also the fact that when you're talking about college basketball, and what makes the NCAA tournament exciting is that you have people who are big-time fans to begin with. You have casual fans, but you also have people, it's their alma mater, or it's within their state.
I understand that.
Big difference. Big difference. That's why there's more of a groundswell. That's why the money for it is far greater than what NASCAR could ever dream of.
That's also the problem with, you had mentioned it earlier in the last hour, that's the problem with Formula One. There's no American driver in Formula One. Or at least there wasn't last year.
Never been popular here. Never. I think they tried to run a Formula One race in, Detroit? Indianapolis. They ran it because they actually built a Formula. You could see the Formula One outline.
Yep.
At the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. When I fly in Indianapolis, I can see it.
And now the one in Texas, though, the course in Texas is really, really nice, though.
It's not going to catch on. It's a waste of money. Okay, it's a waste of money in this country. You have to know what people like. The Formula One is not a likable. I mean, even when it's a change of pace for NASCAR when they do it. Okay, it's a change of pace when they do it. So the change of pace, like going to Watkins Glen, great. My cousin Jim goes to Watkins Glen every year. Even now he lives in Arizona, he flies back to go to Watkins Glen. He grew up near there. So Jimmy goes every year. He loves it. I mean, I think that's fine. You know, casual fans make a difference in the ratings. So in other words, as a casual fan, I will watch the Daytona 500. But I think I'm a little more than just a casual fan. I know who the drivers are. And I know who's good and who's not and who's on what team. I know all that stuff. Okay, I know all of that stuff and what numbers they are and things like that. I can tell you Jimmy Johnson's 48 and Stewart's 20 and Danica, she was 7. Did she change up?
No, she's still 7.
Yeah, I mean, she's 7. Dale's 88. You know, Gordon's 24. I mean, I know that stuff. Okay, I know what I'm watching.
Just be prepared for paint schemes changing, though. That's what you have to watch out in the first race.
I really think that's it. I mean, in the world of relevancy, it's very low.
You know, that reminds me of a question. Why is it that NASCAR has their biggest race right out of the gate?
Well, you know what?
There's
no
build-up.
Interesting about that? Yeah, there is a build-up. There's a build-up all week to this thing. The ratings tell you, that, first of all, it's in February. All right? It's February, which is ratings sweeps month. And I think they, by starting off with a bang, they get people interested right away in what they're doing.
No, I mean, there's a point to that, yeah.
Which is different than other sports. It's different.
Now, with IndyCar, the Indianapolis 500 is the first oval that they run in the season.
Right.
But it's already a couple of months into the season.
Right. But then the key part of that is nobody knows it at the time. All right, so.
I did.
They don't.
By the way, it was 1985. It was 85, the spin to win.
Okay.
I knew you were worried.
Kind of bypassed it when I started running down basketball resumes.
That was very informing, by the way. If you missed it, go to stevejonesshow.com and click podcast.
Well, I'm just talking about where everybody stands now. We're going to try and get Joe Lenardi on the show next week, talk bracketology.
He was great last year.
Yes, and we're looking forward to getting him back on again, and it will make it happen. That's not going to be an issue. We'll get Neil Riddell, Altoona Mirror on later in this week as well and talk with him. Merrill Reese tomorrow. As we get closer to the tournament, that's when I'll start getting some of the Big Ten announcers on. You know, the people that make the tournament and so forth, like Don Fisher from Indiana, we'll get Don on. We'll get Matt LePay from Wisconsin, Paul Keels, Ohio State, Will Tiemann from Michigan State. Matt Shepard from Michigan. We'll start getting those guys on. Brian Barnhart from Illinois. Mike Grimm from Minnesota. We'll get those guys on to talk about their respective teams and where we go from there. I'm going to try and get all of them on before the first games on Thursday. Okay? And then, of course, we'll have Doug on. If Bucknell makes it, then we'll get Doug on as well. Have a long talk with Doug about Bucknell because I think people have discovered my enthusiasm for what Dave Paulson's doing. Bucknell is as good a basketball team as I've seen in person this year.
You said that yesterday, and I was kind of surprised to hear that. Not that I don't think Bucknell's any good, but I mean, I know you've seen some pretty good basketball.
Well, I mean, Mike Muscala does some things as well as Cody Zeller does. Bryson Johnson shoots the ball better than most of the guys I've seen shoot this year. Okay? Now, the difference between Bucknell and the top-tier teams that I've seen Indiana twice, I've seen Michigan State, I've seen Ohio State, I've seen Michigan. All right? I've seen those teams. Still have to see Illinois, Minnesota. I'll see Michigan again here next week. But the difference is the depth. That's the difference. Difference is depth. For example, Bucknell does not bring a Will Sheehy off the bench. Okay? Bucknell does not have a combination of Gary Harris and Keith Appling in the backcourt. Bryson Johnson can play with either one of those two guys, but it's the combination of the two guys. Michigan, they don't bring a Mitch McGarry off the bench. And Trey Burke and Hardaway are both NBA talents in the backcourt. I mean, I think I would be surprised if Trey Burke's playing college basketball next year. Hardaway, we'll see. Hardaway may be in the same boat. I mean, that's the difference, is that the two or three extra players that the top-tier teams have that Bucknell doesn't. Bucknell has a functional bench, and they have a functional point guard. But the four core guys that they put out there, Willman, Muscala, Johnson, and Ayers, any team in the Big Ten would like to have that core four guys.
And you saw them on a night where they did not shoot the ball well.
No, but give Penn State credit. Penn State played well.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to take anything away.
I mean,
away,
Penn State just went into Michigan, for goodness sakes, and did something that I think anybody at Bucknell would respect, okay, against that group. They just went into Ann Arbor and went toe-to-toe with them for the full 40 minutes when everybody thought they were going to be 24, 25-point underdogs. Okay, so, all right. But it's the core four guys that anybody in the Big Ten would love to have, but the difference is numbers 5 through 8. Okay, 5 through 8, that's the difference. Dave Paulson, I think, you know, with all due respect to the wonderful players he has in his 5 through 8 group, okay, and I say this with all due respect to those 5 through 8 guys, and all due respect to what he has, okay? But I'm sure he would love to have a Jordan Morgan or a Will Sheehy or a DeShawn Thomas or an Eric, you know, guys like that. I mean, he'd like to have guys like that that he can turn to. But at this level, the Patriots are really, really good league, and they proved it last year again, Lehigh beating Duke, Bucknell beating Arizona. But again, the difference is that when John Beilein looks at his bench, he's looking at John Horford, he's looking at Caris LeVert, Skip Albrecht, Jordan Morgan. When Tom Crean looks at his group, he's looking at Will Sheehy and Jeremy Hollowell. Adrian Payne comes off the bench and replaces Derek Nix in Tom Izzo's lineup. Okay. Travis Trice comes off of his bench. I mean, that's the difference. Joseph Bertrand and Tyler Griffey come off the bench for Illinois. They'd start. See the difference? It's that 5 through 8 spot, that core four guys for Bucknell can compete with anybody. They're intelligent. They can shoot. They're in sync. They're athletic and cohesive. 5 through 8, Dave Paulson has been able to get the absolute most out of his 5 through 8 on his basketball team. No doubt. I've watched Bucknell. I've watched him on CBS Sportsnet. I've seen them in person. Dave gets the most on his 5 through 8 guys. But it would, you know, I'll tell you right now, but it'd be no skin off his back if he looked down the bench and tell Hollowell, she, get in there.
Oh, you're absolutely right. But I'll tell you what, you got to look at what Ryan Frazier, the freshman, did last night against McKnight. McKnight had 17 points, but only 2 in the final 15 minutes when it really came down to it.
Right. And then Frazier's going to be a really good player for him. But I'm just saying.
Look, oh, I understand.
I can look at this as a neutral observer and tell you what the difference is. All right? With no malice and not putting anybody down. Who have I put down here?
No, I'm not even thinking of that.
I'm analytically telling you that they get the most out of their 5 through 8. Okay? They get the most out of it. That core four group, anybody would love to have. It's just when you look down the bench and John Beilein tells Jordan Morgan and Caris LeVert to get in the game, you're like, must be nice to have that luxury.
You know, in this series, though, between Bucknell and Lehigh, I think you almost want to be on the road as opposed to being home.
It's amazing how the road team, Lehigh won the championship game last year. This year, Lehigh went in, won again at Soika. Then Bucknell goes in there and beats them by 6 last night.
Bucknell has won 3 straight times. Lehigh had beaten the Bucknell 3 straight times at Soika. Bucknell has now captured the last 3 at Stabler.
By the way, I think everyone should take a long look at the Miami investigation by the NCAA. Heads have already rolled over this investigation. Okay? Heads have rolled below the top spot in what appears to be on the surface face saving. There are many across the country. Dennis Dodd, Jay Billis has questioned it, Skip Bayless, they're saying that Mark Emmert should resign. Now, should he? I don't know.
Well,
so far he seems to have blamed everybody else except himself.
Here's the thing, and I think Dodd said this in one of his articles recently online at CBSSports.com. Was talking about the fact that when things happen with players under your control, usually the coach is the one that gets blamed, and the coach isn't getting blamed here, it seems.
Well, no. Let's take that one step further, Kevin. You bring up an interesting point. Let's take it one step further. The new guidelines that have been put out by the NCAA want to directly penalize coaches. You're in charge. You should be penalized. The Jim Calhoun suspension a year ago by the NCAA over Darius Miles was a three-game Big East suspension imposed by the NCAA. Calhoun says, look, I didn't know anything about it. Yet he was the one suspended. Just like Bruce Pearl was suspended 8 games by the SEC a couple years ago. The NCAA did not suspend him. The SEC did. It's interesting how coaches are being blamed for whatever, which, by the way, I agree is a right way to go. I think the individuals involved, and I don't mean just the head coach, because sometimes something can happen and the head coach doesn't know about it. I think the investigation has to show the coach. You may have an assistant coach involved in impropriety. Whomever's involved in the impropriety in breaking the rules in the NCAA should pay a stiff penalty of suspensions and loss of revenue. Right? But and the player involved should also be in the same boat. That is the right way to go. But at the moment, when you look at the NCAA and their botched investigation of Miami, and that's what it is, they appear, in terms of the penalties, to have what could be suspiciously known as a double standard. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the Central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Well, I know you have to leave.
Why do I have to leave?
I said, I know you have to leave.
Oh, I thought you said why. Yes.
No, I don't know why.
Yes.
Now, if you let Richie drive, you get there in 35 minutes.
Well, he might feel more comfortable driving, too. But, you know, it's been 16 years, and he's still fine.
So what is your rant of the day?
Well, my rant of the day has to do with ticket prices in the NFL. Now, the Ravens said they plan to increase ticket prices anyway in the 2013 season. But they win the Super Bowl, and bang, ticket prices are going up to about $100. That's almost a 10% increase, give or take a dollar or two. So if you look at some of the teams that are the most expensive to see, the Giants, about $100. The Jets, almost $120. By the way, they should have had a half price day for some of those Jets games, because I think they would have filled more seats and it would have been worth the dollar you were paying. The Bears, $111. The Cowboys, $110. That's the top five. $100 to see a football game is really limiting the amount of people that can see it. You're now going to just a certain income level and you're losing the regular fan. That's a big that would really concern me if I were the NFL. That you're making it so that the cost just doesn't make the average fan want to go to the game. So what's the average fan have to do? Watch it on TV or sit outside and tailgate. I think you got to you've got to look at this, or the NFL football teams are going to price themselves right out of things.
I think you're spot on. I think you're spot on. Great rant. I think you're right on the money. I think that when you are procuring the dollars that the NFL gets from network television, I mean, you're talking four networks and luxury suites and so forth, you can afford to have, you can have affordability in your stadium. I agree with you.
I'd pay $50 to sit in the nosebleed seats. I'd be fine with that to go to a game. I've done that for baseball.
I understand that. No, I think that affordability at the stadium or the park, the last thing you want is for your game to become a studio game.
Right now, the recliner is very comfy and the HDTV looks really good.
Well, you're probably right about that. And that's something they need to be concerned about. Okay, Josh Yowie coming up. Tribune Review to talk about the Penguins here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, the show has just taken a dramatic turn. Welcome home, Sarah Bartlett.
Oh, thank you so much. Good to be here.
Does it feel to be a Ravens fan weeks after the big win?
Could not be happier. I'm still celebrating, and I just got my Super Bowl Ravens hoodie in the mail last week.
That's great.
I know. I have to celebrate.
I think you should celebrate. That's your team.
It is, and it was.
Meanwhile,
it was exciting.
Oh, it was exciting. It was great. Oh, Dick Girardi's a big Ravens fan.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so you look at the Ravens, and you get a Ravens World Championship hoodie.
Yeah. It's purple. I love it.
It says Super Bowl champions.
Yep, it says Super Bowl champs. Baltimore Ravens has the logo.
As opposed to the guy I was working with before who wears a Danica Patrick hat.
That's true. I can confirm that I have seen that.
Great to have you here.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's great. I mean, it's great to have a real sports fan on board. He's in the car. He's in the car now. You know, he's going down the hill from the cornfield.
He's already planning
right
his
now,
next rant.
He is. He's already. He's looking at Chief going, I hate the guy.
It's probably true.
Oh.
Hi, Kevin.
Well, now that we're. Have a good trip. Well, let's talk about hockey for a moment. John is the beat writer for the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Josh, welcome. It's great to have you on board on the show, and good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
All right, so how do you feel about their level of play the last 2 weeks? Have you seen a difference in conditioning? Have you seen a difference in level of play the last 2 weeks compared to what we saw the first couple of weeks?
Yeah, certainly. They've been really good most of the season. And really, the only lapse they had was about 10 days ago when they lost two consecutive games to the New Jersey Devils. And those two games happened to come at the end of a span that saw them six games in 9 days. And, you know, that's those two games, and for good reason. The schedule has been not kind to anyone these days in the NHL, and the Penguins in particular, who played 11 games in that during a stretch. It's been tough for them. But, yes, you can see the guys, I think, definitely have their legs back now, and the Penguins are coming off a really nice road trip. I think they're feeling pretty good about themselves right now.
Thomas Facoon was acquired for a reason. They want to make sure that somehow Marc-Andre Fleury stays healthy, you know, is not healthy, but is mentally and physically ready for the grind of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Has that acquisition, has that been able to do what they hoped it would, at least early on?
Yeah, it has. I mean, like you said, they acquired him for a reason. They gave him $2 million or a year for a reason. And that wasn't to sit on the bench. They wanted this guy to play a third of the games, and that's what he's done. And he's still a good goaltender. I mean, Vokuna is one of those guys who has always been a good goalie who happens to play on a lot of bad teams historically. So maybe he goes a little unnoticed, but he's a very good goaltender. And just like you said, he's kept Fleury fresh. And there are many people in the organization who will tell you that they really think Fleury's out of gas. Started against Philadelphia last season, and that was one of the reasons he obviously had a rough time. So, yeah, you will continue to see Vokun play a good bit, and as a result, Fleury's played very well, and it might not be a coincidence.
What's interesting is that so far this year, this player has four game winning. This guy does not. James Neal has four. Sidney Crosby does not. But Crosby probably had a hand in some of those game winners somewhere. Well, what has James Neal meant to what the Penguins have done so far?
Well, he's just a pure goal scorer. And, you know, we saw him explode last year with the 40 goals. And I don't think anybody really thought that was a fluke, but to see the level that he's played at this season.
That you're talking about a guy with seven power play goals. His presence on the power play.
You know, you've got a power play with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah.
And we not to defer to Neal and try to force him the puck at times just because he's got such of a great shot. So the power play is really based around getting James Neal the puck, which is pretty scary when you can probably got the two best players in the league out there also. But the Malkin is they're just playmaking as their goals. If it fits working that way, then why change it? And that's the case.
Is it any surprise that Crosby's a plus 11 right now in terms of what he's done on the ice?
Really, I'm talking survivors. But you have to remember, he's barely played any hockey in the last 3 years, really, with all the concussion problems that he's had. And he's also historically a bit of a slow starter. And it was about the eighth or ninth game you could really see him starting to play at the level we're used to seeing. And he's been terrific, really, all February. And he's not quite in full flight, I wouldn't say, but I think he will be in a couple of more weeks. He's really close, and he's the best player in the league right now. I mean, there's doubt in my mind. He's really clicking on off.
Yeah, I had said, Josh, going into this thing, that the Penguins may have caught a break by not playing the first few months of the season, that it bought Crosby more time. I mean, does that theory hold any water?
Oh, I think that's fair, and maybe more mentally than physically, almost, just to give him time. And then, I walk every day. He just was, and that out of his mind was obviously the roughest stretch of his life. He'd never been through anything like that. And then he rushed back to play in the playoffs, and he got through it unscathed, but didn't go the way he would have liked. So, yeah, I think that's a very fair point, and there's no question physically and mentally he was 100% when the season started. And he probably couldn't have said that for the last few years.
How well has Geno Malkin played?
Not very well, really. I mean, he's such of a great talent that he'll still put up points. He's still putting up more than a point per game. He has not been himself. Defensively, he's been terrible, which that kind of comes and goes with him. But you expect him to score a heck of a lot more goals than he is right now. He's only got 3 goals. It's not for lack of chances. He's just not burying anything right now, and he's just a little off. I don't know what it is. It's probably biggest problem with this team right now. It's scary to think that they're 11-5 and Malkin only has 3 goals, and that you certainly assume he will get things going at some point, but he's just mentally, and that happens with him sometimes, mentally he's just not all there. He doesn't seem totally invested all the time, but I think as the season gets closer to the playoffs, you will see a different Malkin.
How has the team handled the Matt Cook situation? Because obviously he's been the center of attention for the last
funny thing is, in the past, when Mark has gotten into trouble, his own teammates have turned on him. And I remember very well the Mark Savard hit 3 years ago. Brooks Orpik and Billy Guerin both said he should be the end of this. But he has received full support this time around. They, as to a man, and I've asked every man in that locker room, they are convinced it was an accident what happened with Erik Karlsson. And the organization and the team has been extremely supportive of him. And I can tell you from not only Matt Cook knows if it was an accident or not, I happen to think that it was, but I can tell you that he was pretty rattled after that game. And I think it certainly meant a lot to him to see the support that he received from his teammates.
Right. If he's rattled after the game, it kind of makes you feel like maybe it's not intentional. It just happened.
Yeah, and that's my opinion, too, quite honestly. Yeah. But when it's Matt Cook, obviously, you have to take a second look. His reputation has certainly warranted that over the years.
Chris, in the league, Penguins appreciate him very much. Is he underappreciated maybe in the big scheme in the league?
You know, I kind of think he is. I mean, he's not a point producer quite like an Erik Karlsson. He just isn't a great power play guy, really. But I'll tell you what, if there are five better defensemen in the NHL, I'd like to see them. And there's just nothing this guy doesn't do. He's just such of a brilliant skater, and he's so much better defensively than people give him credit for. And the Penguins play him against the other team's best player every night. And then their team's best player have a huge night against them. He's just a wondrously talented kid, and he's only 25. He's still getting better. He's dealing with a groin injury right now. But he's getting back, I think, close to 100%. He missed a couple of games. He's just an electric talent. He really is. He's fun to watch. And I think you're right. When you hear people around the league talk about the best defenseman in the NHL, you never really hear Chris's name. And that's a puzzle. Perhaps because there's so much other talent on the Penguins roster, and you got Crosby and Mull, maybe for other people to be overlooked. But he does not go overlooked in Pittsburgh, I'll tell you that.
Not overlooked in Pittsburgh, and I think probably not overlooked by other teams in their scouting report and by general managers as Pascal Dupree. Eating and the depth it gives the Penguins to have a left winger like that.
Yeah, he can play either, which is part of the beauty of him, how versatile he is.
Yeah.
Might be the most underrated guy in hockey. He's at 33 or 34, and he keeps shooting. And the thing about him, he plays really well with Sidney Crosby, which is a nice thing to have. But if you want to put him down on the third line, about done there. He's a great penalty killer. He's just a versatile player, and he's also a wonderful influence in that long. He's one of the guys that doesn't necessarily speak often, but when he does, I think he has everyone's attention. And he's already got 7 goals, just having a great season. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be shocked to see Ray Shiro try to lock him up 2 or 3 more. The Penguins are really, really thrilled with what he's doing right now.
And then another guy that quietly goes about his business is Chris Kunitz. I mean, this guy, he did well with Anaheim. He's done well with the Penguins.
Yeah, and the thing about Kunitz, everyone wants to get Crosby a better winger. And Crosby has said many times that Chris Kunitz has never had, and he loves playing with the guy. Yeah, there's nothing fancy about Kunitz's game, but if you want a guy that does all the dirty work and who still punches in 20 goals a year, he's your guy. He knows how. Great player. He played on Malkin's line last year, and he helped Malkin be a better player. Crosby loves playing with him, and that's a great thing if you can have a role player who could really bring out the best in star players. That's not something you often see. And in Kunitz and Dupree, the Penguins have 2 of those guys. And it's a pretty nice thing for Dan Bylsma to have, I assure you.
How well are they playing in front of Fleury defensively? How well are the defensemen as a core group playing?
Really well, much better, in fact. Obviously, after giving up 30 goals against the Flyers last spring, there had to be philosophical changes. And Dan Bylsma said to his team, listen, we need to stop trying to win every game. That didn't work last year in the playoffs. Let's play a conservative style. Let's play defense first. And given that we have Crosby and Malkin, we're still going to score 3 or 4 goals tonight. That's basically been the approach, and it's been one that's worked. In particular, too, we all know about Letang, but Brooks Borpik and Paul Martin tandem this season. And they have been, Paul Martin had 2 really poor seasons after signing a big money deal with the Penguins in 2010. And he's been a different player this season, and Brooks, much like Crosby, took advantage of that lockout to get healthy. He's had a couple of abdominal surgeries lately. He's playing his best hockey in years, and those two together have been very good. So I don't think the Penguins' blue line is great, but I think it's way better than it was last season. And given how good their forwards obviously are, it's a pretty good combination.
Schedule, of course, has to be done in such a way where it's compressed, and also the number of there's an imbalance early for certain teams as to how many times they play at home versus on the road. How scary is it that the Penguins have been able to survive that imbalance and play as well as they have?
Yeah, I mean, it's really the Penguins have already played 10 games on the road, and they're 8-2, which is the start in franchise history on the road. But they've got a boatload of home games coming up, and people might not think that's a big deal because they're only 3-3 at home. But the thing is, they haven't had any big home stands yet. It's been 2 games on the road, then 1 home, then 2 more on the road. It's hard to get any momentum at home when that's the situation. But, coming up in the next 6 weeks, they have a ton of home games, and I think that's a big deal for them because when they're healthy, they are very, very good at Coastal Energy Center. So the fact that they have so many road games out of the way early certainly bodes well for them, and I really do think they're the favorite to win the Atlantic Division right now, even though certainly it'll be a good battle with Jersey, and I don't think the Rangers or the Flyers are going to go away. But I think that puts them in the driver's seat.
I know that I was listening to a Blackhawks game the other night, and they've been playing terrific. The Blackhawks have played terrific so far. But has there been another team so far, the Pens that impressed early and see handling this compressed schedule well?
Well, the Boston Bruins are really good. Well, one thing about them, they played three fewer games than the Penguins. So they haven't really had to deal with a schedule that's out of the way. So I'll be interested to see how they handle the second half of the season when the schedule gets really busy. But if you just look at the Bruins on paper, there's not a lot of weaknesses there. Well, obviously, Tim Thomas isn't playing this year, but Rask has been very good replaced. And they're probably the deepest roster league. It's a really good hockey. So I'm good, but I think between the Bruins, Devils, Penguins, Blackhawks, I really think those are the four best teams in hockey right now.
Well, and what do they all have in common? They've all won Stanley Cups. They have players on those teams that have won Stanley Cups. The Blackhawks are loaded with guys who won the Cup a couple of years ago. The Penguins are loaded with those kind of guys. The Bruins, of course, won it years ago. So really any sort of winning mentality is there?
No, it's not. Marty Brodeur is on the fountain of youth, apparently. I mean, he's 40 years old. He's 20. He's pretty incredible. No, it's not. I mean, you don't know what to expect in a season like this. But leadership like Crosby and Toews and Chara, you know who's going to be good when it comes down to those teams, and they've been very good.
Absolute pleasure. First time. Appreciate it. I'll watch on a few more times as long as you were able. Felt like you were able to endure this.
Josh, thanks. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
So I get a text from Kevin.
Oh, boy.
And we were talking about Sarah's Ravens hoodie sweatshirt commemorating the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens. And that he has a Danica Patrick t-shirt, two of them.
Oh, wow. He didn't just stop and at the hat.
No. And I get blah, 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 blah. Find it sad, Sarah.
I know. It's not surprising, though.
I mean, you root for the front of the jersey.
Right. It's a team.
Yeah. It's a team.
The team.
Okay. It's not like he's sitting there rooting for the guy with the lug wrench and the Danica Patrick.
Right. Exactly.
You know, stable as they change tires. No.
Just the girl.
Sad.
I know.
He started out the show yesterday by talking about how she won the poll.
Mm-hmm.
Even she said it was 90% car.
Yeah, exactly. Root for the car. Come on.
Root for the car, Kev.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta. The Troy Polamalu situation, sad. Now, I think he'll still remain a Pittsburgh Steeler now, based on some of the people I've talked with.
Okay, sure.
But if they were to cut him, the depression.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, Roger talking him off a ledge.
Yeah. There's Kevin.
Now, for
up
him,
there.
You know. Yeah. You know? Rest of us rooting. I mean, so it's a, you know. Kevin, come on down.
I know. He's wearing his Troy wig. Come on.
He's played for 12 years. He's got to give it up.
Sometime. Oh, well.
I mean, that it's sad.
Just how he is. He's going to have a real great rant tomorrow.
His rant tomorrow is going to be. Now, notice how Mark Lawrence is telling us now he's rantless.
Right. OTM, rantless.
Reichle is not rantless?
Right. No comment on that.
Thank you.
I think you've rested your case.
I believe I have, as a matter of fact. But you know what? It's what makes the station fun. You know, it's fun because you and Allie and Kevin and Mark and Reichle and Buhner, we have a good time.
Oh yeah.
Everybody likes everybody. I mean, then that's the fun part of this. I mean, I'll tell anybody anytime, listen on the Mark in the Morning. You know, and just keep the station on until you get to 3 to 5.
Exactly. You know? All day.
All day long. And, you know, Dan Patrick and so forth. But, you know, but he's been talking about one lap for days now. It's one lap.
It's true. Yeah.
Okay. You got to run 200 of them on Sunday. And that's where he's going to talk to us about pit strategy. I mean, I'm sitting there and talking about silly things such as resumes of basketball teams.
Right.
And tonight will be Indiana, Michigan State. You're a basketball fan, that's a must-watch tonight. It's going to be at the Breslin Center. It'll be at 7 o'clock on ESPN. Kevin has Shikellamy and Central Mountain basketball tonight with the Chief. Here, right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, following the Penn State basketball show from 6 to 7 at Damon's. News coming up, then I'm back with you an hour from now at Damon's to talk hoops with Patrick Chambers.